Next step, number 628, June 18, 2020. Yeah, that's 12th anniversary.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to the next step with Father Vazgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. These podcasts are part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Ministry and provided by epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Did you think that it would happen? I didn't. I definitely did not happen. 12 years ago to the date, June 18th, 2008, we launched the next step. Exactly to the date today, 12 years ago, the first next step came out, and we have been going consistently every week for, 12 years. It's remarkable. I don't think any of us. We were sitting there at this makeshift studio, office studio, and we said, "Okay, how are we gonna produce something like this? What are the mechanics?" And Susie took care of the mechanics. I took care of the content, and before you knew it, we had what was called the next step, our first one. It came out June 18th. And even at that time, we said, we'll see you next week. And we said, okay, we'll do it for a couple weeks. And I remember number 8 was important. It was the China Olympics. Yeah, I'll never forget that. And it was interesting because, you know, 8, the number 8 is very significant in China. It happened to coincide with our 8 podcast. And the Chinese government, there was all kinds of and there were all kinds of tensions, protests against the government, and the Olympics was taken off. And immediately, the next step, we were like pushed into this idea of like, okay, we can't just talk about religion. We're living in a real world. It's not just about, you know, talking about the Bible stories. It's about applying those stories, applying the teachings of Christ to the world today. And I remember we came out with a podcast on August 8th, 8/8/08. It was just a few weeks. It was our eighth week. But I never did we think we'd go for 12 years. We weren't even sure we'd go for a few months, you know, but there it was. Well, the next one was the 9th one, and I had to use Revolution 9 for that. And I guess that was it, though it was a revolution. And we understood the power of the internet, where we were going with this. I think we always had that in focus, that how important this was, what a tool this was, but never understood that it would have the longevity that we are enjoying right now. And thank God for that opportunity. We went through quite a bit. There were many times where we were thinking of pulling the plug. I remember after being diagnosed with cancer and going through those few weeks and saying, okay, what are we doing? But it became a catharsis for me. It became therapeutic for me. And you came along for the ride. I remember, I believe it was our 4th anniversary. I was just recovering, just after surgery, and I'm recovering. And Susan helped make a makeshift studio at the house, and we celebrated our 4th anniversary. Ani Bubbles was part of the act at that time. Of course, Susie was with us, and I remember, I want to say that Greg Bilerian was with us too that day, and we celebrated our 4th anniversary in front of a microphone, talking about, can we do it for our 5th year? And at the end of 5 years, we said, can we do it for our 6th year? I think somewhere around the 10th year, when the celebrations got to be fun, we said, okay, we'll just do it and stop counting. So anyway, we are counting, and we are at year 12, and every few years, every few months, every few weeks, I've turned to Susie and I've said, Susie, should we do it? And she's always greeted it with a very positive attitude that, hey, if you put the content there, I'm there to produce it. And so we did it. And I can't tell you that it has not been fun. It has been a really, really very special, special blessing and a ministry to have. And I can't thank you enough, our listeners. Thank you for every week tuning in. I know some of you have been there from the very beginning. Some of you have joined lately. And I appreciate all the binge listeners. I get comments all the time like, hey, I never knew you were on. And so, like, we've been going through the past episodes and binging on them. And I think that's kind of fun. I guess that's fun. I don't know what you do. I'm going to talk about that phenomena of funness coming up in a few minutes. Today, later on, I'm going to share with you a small little reflection that I had on the Feast of Holy Etchmiadzin. We were at the Armenian Cathedral over here. His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan was celebrating the Divine Liturgy, and it happened to be his 40th anniversary of priesthood. And I was sitting there, and anyway, I have some reflections that I want to share with you. We'll do that in the second portion. Today, I want to start off with talking about where we're at and as a ministry and why it's necessary to continue. And in that discussion, talk about where we are as a church, where we are as a people, where we are as a Christian community, where we are as a world. And needless to say that we are living in a time right now that was unexpected. I think the events of the last few months, whether the COVID virus or the demonstrations begin with the, which was triggered, I shouldn't say beginning because it had begun. It was just sort of staying dormant all these years. But it was the catalyst, of course, was the shooting and the death of George Floyd, which brought about more attention to Black Lives Matter, how important it is to have Black Lives Matter. And this morning, I came upon an email that I want to share with you, because I think when we talk about Black Lives Matter, it's people think that, okay, well, it's something just for Blacks and really all lives matter. And I've heard this, and I had a hard time at the very beginning understanding, well, of course, all lives matter. But they started talking about white privilege. And of course, I took offense because I don't think that as a white person, let me say as a non-Black, I don't think that I had that privilege. And I think that this word puts up stumbling blocks. But I understand it now, what it's intended to mean. And I just received this morning. I want to share this with you. This comes from the California Council of Churches. And I think it was very well written. And I want to share it with you because it gives you an understanding of why they say white privilege, what that white privilege is all about. Let's see. This is created by a young girl in the midst of the nation's confrontation with the original sin of racism. She deliberated on the fact that behind the deaths of many Black people, she considered how she, as a white, young white woman, could easily do what they had done without being murdered. And this is what I want to share with you. Let me read it for you. Young girl writes this. She hashtags each of these statements with a person with a name. I have privileges as a white person because I can do all of these things without thinking twice about it. I can go jogging. Ahmaud Arbery. I can relax in the comfort of my own home. Both M. Jean and Atenian Jefferson. I can ask for help after being in a car crash. Jonathan Farrell and Renisha McBride. I can have a cell phone. And let me read, it kind of breaks up the sentence to remember the hashtags. Let me just read to you. These are the things, white privilege. I can have a cell phone. I can leave a party to get to safely. I can play loud music. I can sell CDs. I can sleep. I can walk to the corner store. I can play cops and robbers. I can go to church. Remember Charleston 9. I can walk home with Skittles. Trayvon Martin. I can hold a hairbrush while leaving my own bachelor party. I can party on New Year's. I can get a normal traffic ticket. I can lawfully carry a weapon. I can break down on the public road with car problems. I can shop at Walmart. I can have a disabled vehicle. I can read a book in my own car. I can be a 10-year-old walking with my grandfather. I can decorate for a party. I can ask a cop a question. I can cash a check in peace. I can take out my wallet. I can run. I can breathe. I can live. I can ask someone to put a leash on their dog when it is required in the public park we are in. This is just recent, 2 weeks ago, Christian Cooper. And finally, I can be arrested without the fear of being murdered. Of course, reference to George Floyd. I thought this was very, very well done, to the point. I'll put a link on today's show notes. Each one of those statements is backed with a name of somebody who lost their life for doing exactly that thing, for decorating for a party, asking a cop a question, and so on. So, white privilege. I think that we tend to back off when we hear words like this, or when we say Black Lives Matter. We tend to go to the polar opposites, like Black Lives Matter. Well, then all lives matter and everything. It's not that. It's not about that all lives don't matter. It's a matter that it's an issue that Black lives do matter and all Black lives matter. So, I really appreciated this, and I know that we are living in a world right now that is being defined by a lot of prejudice, by a lot of bigotry, and we're trying to find ourselves because we're also understanding that in the midst of all this, it's very easy to succumb to some of the pressures. It's very easy for us to lose ourselves and lose ourselves in the discussion and be hypersensitive. Hypersensitive to activities. Just yesterday, Aunt Jemima brand. Aunt Jemima's very famous waffle or pancake syrup. I think they have even a pancake mix. I know in our house we have Aunt Jemima pancake syrup. And I remember several years ago there was a more Aunt Jemima, a person who looked the stereotype. This is not bigotry. It was more of a stereotype of what Aunt Jemima looked like. And I remember several years ago, they modernized her on the bottle. And now they're going to remove her completely. They're going to remove the brand. And it's easy to say, okay, this is silly. What are they doing? But I want you to put your feet in the shoes of others. And I thought about this because, you know, there is an incredible news group, commentary group called the Young Turks. And in fact, there's an Armenian woman on there, and I forgot her name, that she's one of the commentators, but the Young Turks. And this to me is very offensive. Although you listen to them and you listen to what they have to say, yes, you're right with them and you understand their politics and everything, but the idea that they're calling themselves the name of a group of people that wanted to annihilate the Armenian people is repulsive to me. And, you know, it's just a name, you could say. But I understand. I understand when they say Aunt Jemima, you shouldn't have it. Yeah, it doesn't affect me the way it would affect someone else. So put your feet in the shoes of someone else. And I think this is what the basic misunderstanding is all about, is that we're not understanding one another's pain. We're not understanding. We're saying, okay, that's silly. Yeah, it sounds silly in one way. You know, it's just a pancake syrup. On another way, you know, it represents a lot of hurt. It represents something. It's like we've always said, you know, having a sewing kit with red, white, and blue string in it doesn't mean anything. It means you can sew, but sew a flag, put, you know, 13 stripes on there of white and red, and put a small little blanket of white and blue stars, 50 of them, and all of a sudden you've got a flag which means something. It's the same threads, but you've composed something, you've made something, and that is a symbol. It is a symbol that is not just a piece of cloth, but it represents something behind it. And I think this is the sensitivity that we're called to have at this moment in history. Why aren't we getting it? Why aren't we sensitive? Because we're hypersensitive the other way. We're thinking that our rights will go away. We're thinking that our goodness will go away. And I think that deep down we're missing something. We feel like what we had before was so good and now we're going to miss it. So this is always the problem with change. It's like people say, well, you know, why does it have to go in that way? But you know, this is the nature of change. You always assume that A plus B equals C, but also A plus B can also equal D, right? There is another outcome that perhaps you haven't explored, but it is very possible that C and D are, you know, in the same range, that certainly life can get there. We don't look at those other options. We always assume that without this, I can't have that. And that is the prize. And we don't think that maybe there are other ways of having that peace, having that goodness. And of course, this gives rise to what? It causes fear, anxiety, and that fear and anxiety give rise to superstition, give rise to conspiracy, and gives rise to hate mongering. Now, this last few weeks, I have been inundated with calls and people concerned about what is going on, and do you know about this and that? And these are like, I had somebody call me about Bill Gates. Yeah. Bill Gates, you know, has the formula for the cure, but he wants everybody to get down on their knees and accept so that he could sell the formula. I have another person who talked to me about, you know, this is the end of the world. These were things that were predicted in Revelation. And you know, my first question is, where are you getting this from? Obviously, you know, this comes from someplace. And lo and behold, we find out that churches, people under the guise of religion, or at least using religion to justify their points, are spreading hatred, are spreading these kind of bizarre expressions. I've learned more about Antifa, what is that? I mean, like, we're talking about these secret societies. I'd be more scared of these people than I would of these sacred societies. And justifying it in the name of God, I actually started listening to understand where these people are getting it. You can't go beyond 10 minutes listening to these people. And 10 minutes is a lot. It's at the point of vomiting. You are ready to vomit after you listen to these people. Sorry, but yeah. I listened to one of them. Is an Armenian guy. He's talking in Armenian and in English, and he gets to a point of saying that, I'm not going to explain or express to you how I come to these conclusions. Listen to this. He says, that time is finished. Things are moving very quickly. You need to understand that we are being attacked. And who is attacking us? Well, they have an assortment of people, not only Bill Gates, but there's an assortment of people that are the usual suspects in anything like this. And this is basically called scapegoating. Okay? You try to find someone to take the blame. And listen to me, you study enough genocide, you understand that this is one of the first steps, the idea of scapegoating, throwing it on somebody else, that the problems of the world are not mine and yours. It's not for us to handle, but basically they are there because some people do not think the way that I do. That's very scary. It's, first of all, very scary when somebody tells you, don't challenge me because what I know is right. He says that. He says, this is right. I'm past that time of explaining. If you don't want to listen, don't listen. You're going to go to hell. You're going to end up over there. It's actual. And here's the bizarre thing. There's thousands of people following this. Thousands of people listening to this. And you know, when I'm not talking about people commenting like amen and thumbs up and actually engaging in conversation. I mean, this man was actually scapegoating, looking for scapegoats. And he's got on that list the government, the policies, Bill Gates, the homosexuals, the Jews, the globalists, the vaccinators, and of course, Satan himself. These are the perfect groups and characters to blame off the problems of the world from ourselves. And let me tell you, this is the beginning of some of the worst of the worst. And you're seeing more and more of these people. And the only way you can take a proactive approach is to educate yourself. What do you mean, don't ask me questions? Where is it? What a bizarre thing that is. I read it in the Bible. Don't ask me questions. This is what it says. Well, if you read it in the Bible and it's not, don't ask me questions, then there's something wrong. Yes, absolutely, there is something wrong. I mean, we got to get our act together. Everybody shouldn't be reading the Bible, okay? The Bible is not meant for everybody to be thumbing through and taking literally, and each word is like God talking to us. No, God gave us something even greater. He gave us love. He gave us Jesus Christ. Get that through your head before you start interpreting something that you have no knowledge about. And anybody who wants to is now has an iPhone and has a little bit of a space on the internet. Whereas when we did the next step 12 years ago, we were scrambling. Hey, now all you need is a Facebook account. All you need is a YouTube account. And yeah, you are a podcaster. And doesn't matter what your content is, put it out there and there'll be somebody to follow you. And yeah, you can call all these people. The problem. I mean, when you think about the list of people that I heard this week, I mean, I was shocked. First of all, because I was shocked that it was out there. You can't have this. The FCC would close you down if you said something like that. I would close you down, but of course it's on this free space, the internet. And so you only have one choice, to close it down yourself. And actually, this is the advice that I've been giving to these people who've been telling me, well, this is what this has been said. I said, the easiest thing is turn it off. I've got one guy who's giving Bible studies, and he's doing it in the name of the church. He's actually got a position in one of our churches here, and he's giving Bible studies, and he's got thousands of people listening to him. He's interpreting scripture. He's interpreting the book of Revelation. He's coming down and telling people this is what it means, and that we are in the ends, and you know, basic, what's the bottom line to it? You know what the bottom line is. We're in and you're out. You go with us and you're in. You have a spot with Jesus. If you don't, you're out. It's over. And it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming because there's no checks and balances. This is one of the reasons why I want to be a voice out there. I want to continue the next step. But I do have some other ways that I want to continue it. I think that we need to be that voice out there. Anybody with a cell phone is getting out there. I have people commenting about how great it is to see the numbers. You know, we've been doing this for the last 20 years. In the year 2000, we broadcast the Divine Liturgy, the Holy Badarak. And you've got to realize that it is the Badarak. It is special. You can't do it. You can't sustain it every week. Otherwise, what happens? Do you remember? I coined that phrase a few weeks ago. That's right, when you stop laughing, I'll say it. It's the Happy Harry syndrome. That's right. We used to do that when we were kids. It was in Los Angeles. There was a show called the Happy Harry Hour every Sunday morning from 10 to 11 on KTYM. And I shared it with you a few weeks ago. It wasn't like we'd listen to it because there was like news we were getting. It was just something you'd put on in the background. It was part of your Armenianness and you'd listen to it. And that's what the Badarak has become. These people that are claiming that, oh yeah, we've got Badarak and everybody. It's just basically people are longing for something like this. And so they put it on. It's not like you're creating community. It's not like there's people like that are connected or are listening to every word. Yeah, the first few weeks, it was fantastic. It was phenomenal. But now it's like in the background. Well, hey, Sunday brunch. Oh, yeah. The priest down the street is doing a service. Let's put it on. Oh, you know what? I'm meeting with my cigar club. We're going to have cigars. And, you know, it happens to be that, you know, let's turn it on. I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but listen, I've worked through this for the last 45, 50 years. I mean, I know the phenomena of babysitting firsthand. And I've had to put stops to it when I was as a parish priest. Parents would just drop off their kids Sunday morning while they'd hang out at the coffee shop. In fact, it wasn't even long ago from 40 years ago. In fact, I remember at my last parish, it was toward the end while I was there. I remember people squealing on them. Yes, yes. Thank God that we have the squealers. There's a couple from our parish council who used to go to the local Starbucks, drop off their kids, drop off their wives at the church, go to the local Starbucks during Sunday Badarak. Yeah, it's what they did, their duty, right? They dropped off their kids. Same way, it's the duty. Let's turn it on. That to me is not church. And I don't think it is for anybody. But we are being persuaded that, you know, that there's numbers out there. And like I said, I call it the Happy Harry syndrome. Let's take a break right now, because when I come back, I want to talk about something a little bit different, but along the same lines, because, you know, we connect the dots always. So for the song of the day, considering it's our 12th anniversary, we go back to our roots. No, not to the next step roots, to the original roots. This is called Weimarig by the Muradyan Ensemble. Enjoy. Was called Weimarig. Vai, well, Meirig is mother. Vai is, I don't, like, alas, like, whoa, Meirig. Vai, mother. I thought we'd go back to the roots. I know it's Father's Day, but you know, what are fathers without Meirigs, without mothers? And I do only have that it's by the Muradyan Ensemble. I can't find any link. We just looked while it was playing, and we don't have a link to put on our show notes. So we will put the link that appears when you do a Google search. I believe it's a YouTube video of it. This is a group of CDs that were given to me by one of our dear listeners, longtime listener, Vahe. And this is off of one of those CDs. And like I said, all I have is Murad Yan Ensemble is from the liner notes. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. It kind of like takes us back to primal days when, you know, being Armenian and Orthodoxy went hand in hand. And when you do hand in hand, what do? You dance by Mayrik.
White houses and neat little rows contrasting against the sky. Tumble down black shacks over the tracks. Children so hungry they could cry. Chrome, the steel, the metal dream, leaving the teeth to rot. The escapist young mind left behind, saving dimes for community.
Well, we are back on this 12th anniversary of The Next Step, and we've been talking about some of the disappointments that we're seeing, the electronic fallacy that ended up with a Happy Harry syndrome. Yes. I'm going to coin that, yes. Before I tell you what we're going to be doing coming up next step, let me share with you some very personal feelings that I had this week. You know, last Sunday was the Feast of Holy Etchmiadzin. So, you know, I want to share with you some thoughts that I had during that celebration, especially with the Archbishop celebrating his anniversary. I think that there's always thought that we have, and I certainly have thought this way too. Is it right with everything that's going on the outside that we celebrate these kind of anniversaries, or even call the Badarak itself a celebration when so much is in turmoil? So I want to address that coming up just a couple moments, but of course I want to preface it by saying that we are living in very, very unique different times. We have the drift off from globalism. You know, we were on the verge of congratulating ourselves that we're evolving and that there's this global community, that we are one, that we're all interdependent. And then, of course, comes nationalism, comes these parochial ideas, comes patriotism, and now we've got a Supreme Court here in the United States that is a majority made up of conservative votes, thanks to the latest addition by the Trump administration. And yet this week, they take two incredible decisions that go against that, well, in the face of conservatism. First of all, one we'll remember is this morning that took place, a decision that upheld a program allowing young undocumented immigrants to remain in the United States, is what's called the DACA, and directly in conflict with what Trump, the president, wanted. And the other decision, again, equally surprising given the makeup of the court, was that they announced that it's illegal for an employer to terminate anyone from a job due to their sexual orientation or gender identity. Yeah, this is a big plus for the LGBTQ community. This is one that they're applauding. But think about it. Isn't that a plus for all of humanity? Well, I may think so, and the guy on the other side will say, no, that's not right, it's an abomination. But then you have to go and you have to test it against your belief system about what you believe, about what you have, what you understand. And this idea that somehow we are just basically robots and it's just thrown into our head is absurd. This is what you've got to believe, and if you don't believe it, you're wrong. No, you've been given this beautiful mind that is a gift from God, and given the ability to look, to listen, to feel, to understand. And here we stand. And in many senses, it is a standoff, even within the Christian community, within the church community. And this is why I think that our place as the next step, our place as a voice for Armadoxy, is so important. That it's not just, don't get me wrong, this is not about LGBT rights. Yes, on the surface. It's just like the George Floyd moment. It's not about George Floyd. It's about the underlying assertion that somehow I'm right and you're wrong. And at what point do we start saying that we are all members of humanity and that God loves each and every one of us? At what point do we start understanding ourselves as children of God as opposed to a certain mindset? When do we start understanding that, you know, God has created all of us as his children? When do we start understanding that he's given us specific commandments? When Jesus criticizes people, when he says you are doing something wrong, he can, because the basic mindset is that of God. And that's the fundamental understanding among all Christians, that Jesus is God incarnate. So yes, as God, you're perfect. You can say right and wrong, but we are human. We have our frailties, we have our sins. And for us to look at a situation, we have to remember the words of Christ that says, first remove the log that's in your own eye so that you can better see the speck that's in your brother's eye. In other words, mellow out. Take a chill pill. Before you start criticizing people, where are you at in your relationship with God? Remember the story of Peter walking with Christ after the resurrection, and John is behind him. And he says, Lord, what's going to happen to him? And Jesus turns to him and said, if it's my desire that he stay here till the end of time, until I return, what's it to you? Follow me. And that question, what's it to you, is a resounding question. It should resonate in all of our minds before we go out to criticize someone else's life. And so, yes, we are living in a world that is changing. It is evolving. So in the midst of this evolving world, I had a chance last Sunday to celebrate the Feast of Holy Etchmiadzin, and I did it in a rather unusual way, a sort of global way, I should say, because it started off, the Sunday morning started off at home. It was early in the morning, and my son Christopher was staying over, so I had just taken my morning walk or ride, and Christopher was up, and we watched together a YouTube stream from Holy Etchmiadzin, where they consecrated the new cross. But we didn't know what we were watching at the moment. We turned on Holy Etchmiadzin, and most incredible, incredible prayer was being recited by His Holiness, the Catholicos. I mean, I told my son Christopher, I said, I've never heard this prayer before. It is so beautiful. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm so glad it's being recorded. I want to go back and you know, listen to the words and write them, translate them, present them. And, why hadn't I not heard them before? We found out a few minutes later. They were consecrating the new Dome Cross. Well, yeah, I haven't heard him. It happens every, 500 years that you get a new cross? So it was just like, it was like a very special moment. I just turned to Christopher and said, well, no wonder I don't understand it. It's been like 500 years or whenever the last time a dome cross went up. So then they went ahead and they showed us, and we watched it. I don't know if you've been to Holy Etchmiadzin in the last 2 years that we've gone, 2018 and 2019, the doors have been closed because of renovation. They're doing some retrofitting, renovation. They're basically securing the building for another 200 to 300 years, as they tell us. So we haven't been able to go in. So this was another step towards the opening of the Mother Cathedral by placing the dome cross on that dome. Yeah, the same dome that I was climbing. You've seen that picture, right? Yeah. Climb that dome back when we were seminarians. We were not essential. We were expendable commodities. They would send us up to do the cleaning up at that dome way up there. Man, good thing that OSHA wasn't around. They would never approve of anything like that. Anyway, Sunday after we watched the Etchmiadzin feed, I went to St. Leon Cathedral here in Burbank, and there His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan was celebrating the Divine Liturgy, and it was also his anniversary of ordination, 40 years since he became a priest. And actually, it was a double anniversary. It was 30 years since he was consecrated a bishop of the church. So he was celebrating the Divine Liturgy, and I had a chance to sit in the chancel. The chancel area is that little area in the Armenian church that is sectioned off by a small little gated area. Okay, so right in front of the altar. And there's a church, there's a chairs there, and I was all alone. We're right in the middle of a pandemic, so I was sitting there and have a clear view of the altar, and there's oriental rugs on the floor. And it's a really beautiful opportunity to sit there because you can really contemplate. It's a beautiful place to meditate. And I started thinking about the world that I left outside, the hatred, the disease, the hunger, the bigotry that we're listening to every day, you know, wars. And I tried to reconcile those pains with the concept of celebration. We were celebrating the Badarak, and we were celebrating the anniversary of the bishop. And it's difficult when you realize that there's all these horrible things on the outside. What are we doing? What right do we have to come and celebrate? So here we were in the church, and I'm sitting in the chancel, and the liturgy is going on, and Surpazan, the primate, gets to the point where he's going to deliver the sermon, and he starts reflecting rather emotionally. He recalled the day when he knelt down before the altar at Etchmiadzin and accepted the call from God to serve the church. And it was the Venerable Catholicos at the time of blessed memory, His Holiness Vazgen I, who consecrated this young deacon and bestowed upon him the holy order of priest in the Armenian church. So as he's talking, as the sermon's going on, my focus as he's talking, my focus all of a sudden wanders to the carpets, to the oriental rug that's laid out right before me. And I'm sorry, looking at the patterns on there. And he's talking. 40 years, you know, so much has happened, so much has taken place. Following his ordination as Father Hovnan, he traveled to Europe. He was educated at Oxford. He was appointed in Canada and rose to the rank of bishop. He shaped the Canadian diocese before accepting the call here to the Western diocese 17 years ago. He saw the completion. He saw to the completion and consecration of the St. Leon Reventian's Cathedral, and the expansion of many, many diocesan ministries. So I'm listening to him. I'm looking at this oriental carpet. And I think 40 years ago, perhaps this carpet that was lying in front of me was just being created at the time. I mean, single threads of different colors were coming together. One ornate pattern was leading to the next. And each pattern represents a space and time and has a unique story. Think about it. Each pattern on that carpet. Each pattern is a testament to the will and the determination of what? A rug weaver. A flower on one row connects to a swirl above it, to a shape below it, and each dyed thread complements the color around it. So much so that it becomes obvious that one master weaver has put the tapestry together in harmony and joy. The story of the weavers, we do not know. Much like the goodness that is spread by the priest, who is following his call and living his ministry, we don't know it. The Archbishop continued his reflections and recounted how during the 40 years, his love and loyalty to the Mother See of Holy Etchmiadzin was always at the center of his action. It was a love for Etchmiadzin that he felt as a young seminarian arriving in Armenia in 1976. He got to Armenia about a year before I was there. He was there a year before I was. So he had already gone through 1 year of training when I arrived at Etchmiadzin. It was at Etchmiadzin that he met and grew and learned in the shadow of the great patriarch Vazgen I, who was Catholicos of the Armenian Church from 1955 to 1994. And those early feelings matured and kept him connected to the efforts to build the Armenian church, what we think about Armenian church today in the 21st century. From the youth rallies, I mean, he was in charge of youth rallies back in the 1700th anniversary Christianity in Armenia. He did youth programs for the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide, now the renovation of the cathedral. I mean, these are all major tasks, you know? And at each assignment, the love of Christ was expressed in the outpouring of goodness and assistance he gave to the community, to the people who were part of that hurting world. I mean, only God knows. Nobody knows. Being a priest, I know that there are certain things that you cannot tell people. Only God knows how many lives he's touched. How many have seen the wonders that he's done, have been helped by the outreach programs he's put in place, and have been inspired to do likewise in this hurting world. You know, it's one of the things that I realize that the church has its structure, but because it is the church, it has a unique position within the community. And you as a priest have a unique ability to help that community in a way that you can't anywhere else. So as the Archbishop spoke that morning, so did the rug. I mean, think about it. I'm looking at it. Viewed up close, you might imagine that each pattern on the rug is a creation of a person and a place and time. How can it connect so perfectly to the other patterns on the carpet? But view it from afar, and the rug is one complete carpet that tells a story of people, of determination, of focus, of beauty, and most importantly, of intertwined expressions, people putting them together, putting it all together. It's obvious that there is a common thread that the master weaver has used to bring all of the elements together to form one complete display of beauty in that carpet. So looking at that carpet, I'm thinking like, wow, it was 40 years ago exactly on this feast, Holy Etchmiadzin, that our Surpazan, His Eminence, was ordained. Now this feast that we celebrate is the feast of the descent of Christ, and that's expressed in the word Etchmiadzin. The word literally means, Etch means to descend, Miadzin means only begotten. And this is the vision that St. Gregory the Illuminator had in the year 303 to build this church where Christ descended and said, this is where you will build the church of the Armenian people. So Christ is that thread that runs through the life of the church. I mean, it was just coming clear to me. I'm looking at the carpet and I'm listening to the story and you realize Christ is the thread that runs through the life of the church, the one constant in the life of the people and the clergy, and bringing it all together to form the tapestry, which we call the Armenian Apostolic Church. So the church, brought together and tied by Christ, is beautiful, it's complete, and it becomes the functioning body of Christ in this world. Now, the operative word there is functioning. You're a functioning body. You're a body. You're working. You're meeting the challenges. You're addressing the pain of this world. So during the last 40 years, His Eminence has served the Holy Armenian Church. And each of the events and experience that he has worked through have come together to present a beautiful tapestry, which you can characterize by sacrifice and love. So you look at it as a whole, instead of those little pieces, instead of those little ornaments, and you see Christ working through the church, through Holy Etchmiadzin, which is the completed vision as seen by the Illuminator back then, and the expressions of beauty for us today. And in this vision and in this expression, we can find Etchmiadzin. We can find the begotten descending. Christ descending into this world that is hurting, that suffers from hatred, from disease, hunger, and pain. And for those few minutes sitting in the chancel of the church, I had a chance to see bits and pieces of two lives are primates, Sirpazan's life, and the art piece which had was woven into a carpet. And while we can appeal to so many different means to tend to the wounds and pains of the world, it becomes very obvious it is the human heart that needs to be mended. You can't legislate morality. I've shared this with you in the past. You can't say, here's a rule and a law that says it is illegal to be a bigot. People are bigots. You've got to be approaching the heart. You've got to be mending the heart. This is where we need to be active as a church. All these people, you know, let's change the laws, let's change the rules, but no one's changing the heart. For us to understand that our only salvation is for us to understand one another as brothers and sisters on this one little planet, to understand ourselves as part of a bigger community than just our home, just our neighborhood, than just people who are like-minded and like-skinned as us. And we're part of humanity. And so we start mending the heart, and the only way to do that is with love. God incarnate, Etch Miadzin, Christ coming in our midst. The elements to take care of the problems of this world are there. They're as evident as the life we celebrated that day, as the carpet that I was looking at. They are in the dyes, the threads, the life, the events, Etch Miadzin and Christ active in our life. This is what this priest was thinking on this celebration of Holy Etch Miadzin.
My life has been a tapestry of rich and royal hue, an everlasting vision of the ever-changing view, a wondrous woven magic in bits of blue and gold, a tapestry to feel and see, impossible to hold.
Well, this is usually the spot where Susie comes in, and there's no sense changing anything around. It's the 12th anniversary. Here's Susie.
Hi, Susie here again, reminding you that the next step is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We invite you to check out our extensive archive about applied spirituality and Christianity for just about every life situation. You'll find past podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and of course at the In His Shoes website. We're proud to have these podcasts available to our worldwide audience, with listeners added daily. To become a partner of this ministry, please consider donating by pressing on the donate button on our website. Your monetary contributions goes to maintain and further this dynamic mission, bringing the message of Armodoxy into the lives of a waiting world. Let us know if you'd like to sponsor a series of podcasts by dropping us a note at feedback@epostle.net. That's epostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World, .net. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, did I thank all of you at the beginning of the show today? I thank you again at the end of the show. And here we are starting our 13th year of podcasting. We're going to be doing a few things a little bit differently. As I've shared with you for several months now, we're trying to find ourselves and find ourselves within this changing world, and really to be more efficient in how we communicate. The communications arena is always one that has interested me. I know the communications is the glue by which society holds itself together. And when you break down those communications, that's when you break down whatever society it may be. So it's always been important that we get the word out. That's why from early on in my ministry as a priest, one of the first things I remember at St. James as an assistant pastor, I focused in on getting that newsletter out. It was the same at St. Andrew Cupertino. We put together a newsletter, but we were right in the middle of the Silicon Valley. And it gave us an opportunity to find new means, whether it was the small Timex computer. We went from there to the Coleco computer. Yes, few people remember the Coleco, which had actually magnetic tape to keep documents. And we actually produced with this magnetic tape computer. And we went over to the later on to desktop publishing with Macintoshes. But soon we found a way of actually putting ourselves out there. And this was in the early 90s when we started a series of children's programming of called A Few Minutes with Derhair. And yeah, if you haven't seen them, they're really kind of cool because I have black hair and I do have hair in these. Okay. Yeah, we can put a link on today's show notes and it's on the YouTube Armadoxy page. So we started putting these out and they were very popular, but they were cumbersome. I remember the Sunday schools. I had visited a few different Sunday schools where they were showing these. They'd have these actual setups where they had the huge TV placed on top of this rolling cart and underneath it was this VCR. So you do it. Well, imagine today, now 30 years from that time, and we are using different technology, but we're getting out the message. And I've been very I've exploited that technology. I've exploited it, and I want to thank you. I've been blessed to be able to do that, whether it was our shows that we did at St. Gregory, whether it was the first Divine Liturgy that we broadcast from Pasadena, and then the television that we used, and then later on, the In Step with Christ, A Few Minutes or A Few Steps with Christ. These were all different shows that through the years used the means that were given to us. And right now we're at a point where we're seeing that 12 years of doing the next step is still in many ways a very novel thing. Yeah, yeah, surprise. I know everybody now has podcasts. And at the very least, you have a podcatcher on your phone. If you're in the Apple world and you have an iPhone, you have actually an app called Podcast. And if you haven't already, just tune me in on there. That's the easiest one, by the way, because it just comes in. But, you know, we are on all the podcatchers, which before anybody was talking about podcatchers. So here we are at year 12, and we realize that, okay, if we're going to just sit there and say, yeah, we were here before, no big deal, right? Someone's always going to be there before you. Okay, we were there before everybody. Okay, big deal. What are we doing now? Where are we going from here? And you cannot stay. You cannot rest. My ordaining bishop taught me this when I was ordained. He said it on the day that I was ordained. He said, a Christian is a restless person. And I don't know if that was a curse that he threw on me. I'm being honest. Or if that was really what we're supposed to do. But I know that I have been restless. I cannot stay in the same place at the same mode of operations. And so we are at a point right now where as we begin the 13th year, I want to do some baby step. Next steps, but baby steps. Small steps. Some small podcasts along the line of what we do every year for the Lenten journey. These 5 to 10 minute little podcasts that can be done more frequently, but have more impact and have a message that kind of punches and then walks away. I'm sharing this with you, my next step listeners. This is where we're going. And hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll be able to debut our first one of those. So it is a new chapter for us. I'm taking advantage of having an anniversary today to announce it because, you know, anniversaries are always good because they let you think about where you were, what you've done, and where you're going. And that's what I'd like to do. That's how I want to spend today's anniversary with the people who I celebrate the anniversary with, namely you. So thank you very, very much for being part of this ministry, and we look forward to new things. If God gives us the life, we're looking forward to all of these new adventures, all to bring in the kingdom and let people know that we have a loving God, a caring God, a God who is compassionate, a God who stands there and says, "You are forgiven because I love you." That's the message that Jesus Christ brought. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. There are people in my midst who hear this that will not taste death before the kingdom has arrived. And so they saw that kingdom. That's what we're celebrating. That's what Armidoxy is all about. And I hope you're in there for the long haul. So God bless you, and thank you very much for joining us today and all the sessions that you have done before this. This is for the neophyte, so if you are new to the Next Step, hey, welcome on this 12th anniversary. Okay, now before the tune comes to signal the end of today's show, let me say a thank you again to my son Vaderjan, who wrote this incredible bit of music and actually orchestrated it and played it. So here it is. Ready? We're ready to end and begin year number 13. There it is. Big thank you to all the members of my family, to Susan, to Anush, everybody who prays for this ministry, who have been on the ground and supporting. Big thank you to Susie, who's been there on every episode from day one. For Ken, hey, listen, if you heard somebody coughing, that was my dog barking, okay, Ken? Off and on with the cigarettes, but a big asset. And on behalf of Susie and Ken, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.